Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to our great big Friday open forum show on Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. What did I say? Friday? I can't get my days right. It's Thursday, yes.
Like Billy Pilgrim, you've become unstuck in time.
Did that happen to Billy Pilgrim?
Yes, frequently.
That's painful to get unstuck in time.
Yeah.
It makes things go wrong. Jimmy Akin is our guest this hour. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi. How are you doing, Si?
I'm very well and well-fed. We did our after we do our pledge drives, mm-hmm. we have a food challenge that we do for the online folks, people who watch the show online.
Yeah. And this time it was haggis, neeps, and tatties, which is sort of the national dinner for Scotland.
And it was delicious, Jimmy. You did a great job. Jimmy cooked
Thank you.
All and it was delicious. Open forum today means any question that you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. If you have a religious question that's always been kind of nagged at you, or maybe you've got someone who is confronting you with a religious problem or conundrum or philosophical question and you'd like an answer, Jimmy is the guy to talk to, and you can talk to him just by dialing 888-318-7884. A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist is Jimmy's latest book, and you can get that at shop.catholic.com. 888-318-7884 is the number. I didn't know if I was going to like haggis, and I didn't
well,
mind
many
haggis
people
at all.
Are kind of scared of it based on a knowledge of what goes in it. Kind of the simplest way to say it is it classically, and this isn't exactly what we did because I got it from a can, mm-hmm. but classically it's ground animal parts and oatmeal boiled in a sheep stomach.
Yeah.
But this was a little Americanized because the official stuff isn't allowed for sale in the United States.
Yeah, so you can't buy some of the stuff that goes in there. But I'll tell you, I don't know how I would feel about Scottish haggis, but American haggis was pretty good.
It was really good. And I would expect the Scottish haggis would be just as good or better.
We got a bunch of calls already, Jimmy. Shall we go to calls?
Yeah. And by the way, if people want to see the haggis eating segment, it'll be posted online at YouTube and Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Let's go to Alan in Walnut Creek, California. Alan is smart because he's got the Catholic Answers Live app, and that's where he's listening. Alan, your question for Jimmy.
Hi, thank you. I'm recently Catholic, and my wife and I were hoping you could explain about whether or not our confessed sins are exposed to all mankind during the general judgment. I'm wondering, because that seems just really shaming and terrifying, and at least at the surface level, so I'm a little confused.
Thank you. Well, so what Jesus tells us in the Gospels is that nothing that that is done will remain concealed. And he doesn't give an exception for, well, if you've confessed it, it'll be kept secret. So I can't rule out the possibility that it might be kept secret, but he doesn't give us reason to think that in what he says. Taking what he says at face value, I would assume that all of my sins, whether they've been forgiven or not, are going to be publicly manifest so that God's justice and mercy can be publicly vindicated at the last judgment. So if I have sins, God forbid, that I have not been forgiven of, then they'll be manifest, and God's judgment on me, his perfect justice will be manifest publicly. And if I've done them and I've been forgiven of them, then God's mercy on me will be publicly manifest. And so I would assume that that it's all going to happen, that it's all going to be let out one way or another. Having said that, it's quite possible that for the saved, because we know there won't be any suffering in heaven, that some of that effect will be spilling over into the last judgment already. And so even though a knowledge of what we did in our lives will be made public, at the same time, a knowledge of how we did respond to God's grace and how he did forgive us will also be made public, and we may not experience any pain over the revealing of our sins. On the other hand, that may not happen. It may be a purifying experience such that we – it's kind of like purgatory in a way. In fact, it may be purgatory for some people who are alive at the time of the second coming. And so it is possible that it could be embarrassing and somewhat painful to have our forgiven sins revealed. But the good news is even if that's the case, that embarrassment will be finite and the joy to follow will be infinite. And so if we keep things in perspective, that would give us motive, number one, to sin less right now, and number two, to be confident in God's mercy and that everything will be okay in the long term as long as we follow him.
Alan, thanks very much for being our first caller. I hope that that was helpful to you. 888-318-7884 is our number. And we go now to Frank in Birmingham, Alabama, also listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Frank, you are on with Jimmy Akin.
Hello, how y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Good, good. My question is, given that God doesn't change, God cannot change, also given that Jesus is fully God and fully man, did Jesus know everything, like, let's say when he was 20 years old or when he was working with Joseph?
Did he know everything that God knows? Is that your question?
Exactly.
Okay. So, as you say, Jesus is fully God and fully man. Since he's fully God, he has a divine mind with divine knowledge, and that knowledge is omniscient. So he, in his divine mind, in his divine knowledge, Jesus knows everything. He knows everything the Father knows, everything the Holy Spirit knows, everything God knows, in other words. And so as God, in his divine mind, he had all knowledge, and what age he was at does not matter because that knowledge, as you say, is unchanging. It's infinite and unchanging. And so that's the kind of divine knowledge he had in his divine mind. In addition, Jesus has human knowledge, and as the Catechism points out, human knowledge by its nature is limited. And so that knowledge grew, and Luke indicates it grew in his gospel when he says Jesus grew in wisdom. And so his human knowledge grew, and he would even have to inquire about various things in order to learn them. That's what the Catechism says. You can look that up in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It has a section on the knowledge of Christ and on the human soul of Christ. So just like God in his divine nature was omnipotent, having all power, you know, all strength, all power. But Jesus also has a human body, and human bodies by their nature are finite and only have a certain amount of strength, not infinite strength. In the same way, Jesus had a divine mind that knew everything, and he also had a human knowledge that was limited.
Okay, Frank?
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you very much, Frank. Again, it is open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. The number, if you would like to get your question in, 888-318-7884. And I should stress, you don't have to be Catholic to call. Anybody is welcome to call. As a matter of fact, the question doesn't necessarily have to be exactly about the Catholic Church. If you have a moral question, a philosophical question, a more general religious question, all of those are welcome. 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Jimmy Akin on Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Catholic Answers Live with Jimmy Akin is coming right back.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 26 books in the 20 Answers series, we're going to knock 60% off the price, and we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. And this year, to make it easier, we're offering free shipping on the sampler if you live in the continental United States. That's 60% off, free shipping, and over 500 answers to questions you have about the Catholic faith. Join us this Lent and Easter to take the 20 Answers Challenge challenge, and together we can be part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
We struggle with sin. We're distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. Thankfully, the Church has given us Lent, the perfect time for reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. The saints of the Counter-Reformation faced greater obstacles than these, yet they each found the grace to persevere during a tumultuous time in the Church. How can we do the same? Reform yourself is a good place to start. We all need to reform our souls. This Lent, let the saints who reformed the Church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. Lines are open for any question you have about religion, Catholic faith, philosophy, morality. We take them all, especially when Jimmy's here. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Jimmy, on Facebook, the following question typed in by Katrina. She asks, hi, I have a mental illness, and I'm wondering what the Church teaches about it. Are some mental illnesses unforgivable?
Well, mental illnesses are conditions, and they're not things that are acts of the will. If you have a mental illness, whatever it may be, it's like a physical illness. A physical illness is not an action. It's a condition. Mm-hmm. And since only actions can be sinful, only actions can need to be forgiven. So if you just have a condition, it doesn't need to be forgiven. If you have the condition of being tall, mm-hmm. it doesn't need to be forgiven. If you have the condition of being short, it doesn't need to be forgiven. If you have the condition of being smart, it doesn't need to be forgiven. If you have the condition of being not so smart, it doesn't need to be forgiven. If you have a condition of being in physical health, it doesn't need to be forgiven. If you have a condition of being in physical illness, doesn't need to be forgiven. Finally, if you have the condition of being in mental health, it does need to be forgiven. And if you have the condition of being in mental illness, it doesn't need to be forgiven. So the answer is, if you have a mental illness, it's a cross that you're carrying, and the Church has compassion and, you know, would urge you to do whatever is possible to find relief from that condition. But it doesn't need to be forgiven. It's not a sin. And so your job is to deal with it as best you can, but the condition itself isn't a sin. And so you don't have to worry about that.
Katrina, thank you very, very much for that question. And we're here on Open Forum Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so write again if you like on Facebook or give us a call anytime. 888-318-7884, the number. We go now to an anonymous caller in Minnesota listening on AM 1370. Anonymous, you are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air. What's your question?
My daughter is 31, and she has twin girls, mm-hmm. and she wants to have more children, but she got endometriosis so bad. Mm-hmm. And her fallopian tubes are toast. So her faith is really growing a lot. And they would like to do in vitro, but she is choosing not to.
Mm-hmm.
Is that such a big sin? Or?
Well, the way that that Catholic theology looks at this is that we need to work within God's design for human reproduction in order to bring new human life into the world. And if we work with God's plan, then we're doing our job as his creatures. If we do something outside of God's plan, then since it involves the subject of bringing a new human being into the world, that's a very serious matter. And if we're doing that in the wrong way, in a way that violates God's design, then that is a big sin. I mean, to give an example, suppose that a man wants to have a child and he doesn't have a wife, so he goes out and rapes somebody. Well, he may get a child into the world as a result of that, but the way he did it was not in design, not in accord with God's design. It was very much against God's design. He could also go down to the red light district and pay a prostitute, and he might pay her enough to have a child. In fact, there are people out there who are serving as surrogate mothers right now for money. And that's another thing that is a notable violation of God's design. It's separating the bringing of a new child into the world from marriage. And that's one form of separation from God's plan. But there are others. One of the things that God designed was for the human reproductive process, sex, to be the way that new humans would come into the world. And if you then say, well, we're not going to use God's appointed means to bring new children into the world, we're going to invent a new process where, you know, we just take genetic matter from parents and combine that in a lab. Well, that's a pretty significant deviation from God's plan. So it also leads to additional problems, because when in vitro fertilization is done, just apart from the fact that it's a deviation from God's appointed way of bringing new humans into the world, it also ends up leading to situations where they don't just do one sperm and ovum, they do a bunch. And you end up with a lot of those kids dying who were brought into creation in a petri dish. They end up not implanting or spending years in a freezer until they die, or just being dumped. Comparatively few of them actually end up being brought to term, and many of those children, snowflake children, end up dying because of the way they were brought into the world and then not used or ill-treated or however it may be. So this is a serious matter. Now, I have a lot of compassion in this area because, you know, like most people, I wanted kids. You know, I got married. I hoped my wife and I would have a bunch of kids. And then my wife passed on and I haven't remarried. And as a result of that, I'm probably not going to have kids in my lifetime. But that's a limitation that we have to face if we're going to work with God's plan. We need to use the options that are open to us and be willing to accept it when we don't have the option we'd like to pursue, because it would take us away from God's plan. If we stay with God's plan in the long run, that's what's going to make us happy and make other people happy, compared to taking liberties and going outside of it, especially in a matter as important as bringing new humans into the world.
Okay, Anonymous?
Yeah, I guess so. My wife she's for doing this so they can have more children, because my son has twins and another daughter, three children through in vitro because his sperm count was low. So she looks at it that way.
Well, I would encourage your wife to look at it in terms of gratitude to God for the children that your daughter was already able to have, and then to accept the current situation just like you would accept any other illness, as something that, even if it's painful, it's something that God has willed to allow for now. And who knows, there may be a procedure invented in the future that could repair your daughter's fallopian tubes, at which point having children could be an option again.
Anonymous, thank you very, very much for that call. Let's go to Brian in Bangor, Maine, listening on Presence Radio. Brian, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. It's a great show. My question is about the reading in Matthew's gospel, when Jesus says it's easier for a camel to crawl through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get to heaven. I'd like Jimmy's, if he could elaborate that on a little bit.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Sure. So there are sort of three explanations that are often given in terms of what the image Jesus is what is the image Jesus is bringing to mind here. And then after that, I'll tell you what the parable means. But in terms of what image, why would you come up with an image like this? There are three proposed answers, and I'll give you the first one of which is just wrong, but you will hear it a lot. The idea behind the first suggestion is that at Jerusalem, there was a gate known as the Eye of a Needle. The eye of the needle, and that it was hard for a camel to get through that gate. The camel had to like kind of scrunch down, and that was the only way a camel could go through this gate at Jerusalem. And so some people have said that's the image he's conjuring here. He's talking about this gate in Jerusalem. No. This is not accurate. There was no such gate in Jesus' day. This is something that's just a legend. The second, and this is more plausible, is that when he says camel, so in Aramaic, Jesus' native language, the word for camel is gamla. And it is claimed that in Aramaic at the time, the word gamla had a second meaning. Just like in English, you know, if someone – of course, I don't know if they'd say this today, but back in the 50s, an advertising slogan was, I'd walk a mile for a camel.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And
it was a cigarette.
A camel cigarette is what they meant. Even though they said camel, they meant a camel cigarette. Well, it's claimed that in Aramaic in Jesus' day, the word gamla not only meant camel, it also meant camel hair rope. Oh. And so the idea would be you're trying to shove a rope through the eye of a needle.
Uh-huh.
And that I find intriguing. What I don't have is proof one way or the other that this is what the word meant at the time. But I have been told that by an Aramaic teacher, in fact, who is also a native speaker of modern Aramaic. But to be sure of that, I need to go and do some research in lexicons and say, what evidence do we have for how was this word used in the first century? It certainly would make conceptual sense, you know, to talk about a needle in conjunction with a rope.
Yeah, right.
So I find that intriguing. The third option is he means to conjure exactly the image he says. A camel is a big animal. It's bigger than a human being by quite a bit. And it would be therefore practically impossible for a camel to go through the eye of a needle unless some really improbable quantum phenomena occurred.
Yeah.
Those are the three options for what image is he conjuring. Now let's go to what does he mean? It's real simple. It's hard for a rich man to go to heaven. It is possible, but it's hard, especially in Jesus' day, because back then most people lived in abject poverty and it was really hard to get ahead. And many of the people who were rich, in fact, got rich by illicit means, by oppressing other people, by stealing and shady transactions and things like that, kind of like drug lords today. Or even if they didn't do anything that was itself sinful, in order to have the drive to become rich, they had an unhealthy obsession with riches that would lead them to be uncompassionate towards the less fortunate and to do sinful things. And so whether just for reasons of greed or outright criminality and moral turpitude, people who were rich had additional challenges, especially back then, in terms of depending on God and accepting his forgiveness and not being concerned just with earthly affairs, because that was how you got rich, was being concerned with earthly affairs. And so Jesus said it's not impossible, but it was challenging. And what he was using here was a form of hyperbole, which is exaggeration to make a point.
And thank you very much for that, Brian. We do appreciate that call. 888-318-7884 is our number. I had never heard the rope one. Mm-hmm. That kind of has the ring of
possibility.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Well, so does the gate one, but that
Except
one's just not true. Yeah.
There's just no gate called the Eye of a Needle.
Well, it wasn't in Jesus' day.
Oh, it is called that.
Yeah, some tourist guides will say, well, this gate is called the Eye of the Needle and stuff.
Oh, so it's kind of a – they retroed it in.
Yeah.
Is that the right way to say they
retroed? Oh, it's certainly an intelligible way.
Retcon.
Now, retcon would be the
– that's the word I was looking for.
Technical comic book word, yeah.
Yeah, so if you want something to have been in the past in the comic book world, you just
you
make
a
new comic book.
You know what the opposite of a retcon is?
What?
A mopee.
Really? Why mopee?
Yeah, a mopee is where something is so embarrassing in a comic book, everyone agrees to forget it ever happened.
Oh.
It's named after Mopee, one of the seven heavenly helpers who gave the Flash his powers.
We just mopee that right out.
Yep.
Okay. Open forum today with Jimmy Akin. 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll be right back with more open forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I have wanted to thank you so very much. Thank God. Thank God you guys are here for us. Believe it. I just can't believe all that you've done and how you've stuck with it. Many times when I think I can't do something, I think about some of the things that you've talked about.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers Magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order. Order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Tim Staples, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, Chris Check, Carlo Broussard. Our on-fire lineup of speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker for your event, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest, and the 20 Answers sampler remains on sale for 60% off. You get all 26 books in the 20 Answers series on all kinds of stuff. All kinds of topics are covered. You have one in there, Jimmy, on Bible prophecy.
Yeah, I do.
And there's...
I have more than one. Not both on Bible prophecy, though.
Oh, you have another? Wait.
On salvation.
Oh, right. That's a newer one, the salvation one.
That's the older one. Bible prophecy is the newer one.
All right. Just go with it sometimes. When I make a mistake, Jimmy, just say, yeah, sure. Faith and science is in there. I don't really want you to
truth
do that.
Truth isn't that important.
God, we want the truth. Witchcraft and the occult. All these kinds of things are in there. The 26 books. The challenge is to read them all before the end of the Easter season, which ends on May 20th, also Nick's birthday.
Hey.
If you took the challenge, isn't that your birthday? No? Oh. May 20th? Yeah. Oh, you look awesome. Like you panicked there for a minute when I said it. You afraid? People? Oh. Yeah. He's all excited that we said his name. Six new books from last year, six brand new titles. All of it 60% off, and they ship it to you for free.
And so it's an achievable challenge. You can do
it
that.
It is, yeah. And it's a brick of books when you get it. It's as heavy as a couple bricks probably, and it gets to you for free. You just go to shop.catholic.com. More than 650 people have already taken the challenge. You can too. And I think you'll be happy you did, because it's like advanced catechism class or something. You really you've 26 books. That's like a lot. Well, I was going to try to do the math, but that's a lot of answers.
It's a lot of answers. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like there are 20 answers per book
and 26
books.
Yeah.
How many cards are in a deck of cards?
52.
And multiply that by 10.
500 and something.
520 answers yeah. is what you'll get.
All of that at 60% off. All right, Jimmy, back to the phones. Enough of a break for you. We need to get you back to work. Let's go to Connor in Nashville, Tennessee. The third person today who is listening on the Catholic Answers app, which you can get for your iPhone or Android, wherever you get apps, and you should. Connor, you're on with Jimmy Akin.
Hey.
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 First, I want to say that, like, I love the show.
Awesome.
And it's really helped me a lot.
Thank you, Connor.
Thank you.
But my question is, so I have a brother, and he is an atheist, and we were talking the other day, and I said, the universe ultimately demands a cause. And so the cause needs to be like a necessary infinite reality, something that lacks nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it couldn't lack any knowledge or power or goodness. And he said, it was like, why can't this entity lack any evil? And I said, because evil is an absence of good. And he basically, the argument was like, how do you know that evil is an absence of good? Rather, good is an absence of evil. Like, how do you know that good is the thing mm-hmm. and evil is an absence of good?
Okay.
Rather than good being an absence of evil.
If I were going to argue this position, I would say, well, just think about your own experience. When you experience something as a good, then you experience it in a way that is positive, that you recognize there's value here, there's something positive here, there's something good here. In fact, we use good as another way of saying positive. If something has positive qualities, that means it has good qualities. And so there's an innate, intuitive perception of the good in terms of things that are positive. When you think of something, when you experience something as an evil, you have a different experience. You think of it as being somehow wrong. There's something here that isn't the way it should be. And that can be any number of different things. It could be if someone commits a moral wrong against you. It could be if you have an injury, if you have an illness, if you experience a disaster, let's say a rock falls on you and harms your health so that your body's not functioning the way it should. Well, people say that kind of event is an evil. It's what's known as a physical evil. And whenever we experience evils, it's something about them we understand is not the way it should be. And so just like health involves a feeling of this is the way it should be, and acting towards someone in a kind way results in a feeling of this is how it should be. And then anytime someone's acting in a hateful way, or anytime we have an injury, we have a sense of this isn't the way it should be. I mean, even in the case of a hateful situation, maybe I'm justified in attacking somebody because they've attacked me first and I'm defending myself. But even then, even when it's right for me to defend myself, something is still wrong because I shouldn't have been attacked in the first place. So every time there's something we would regard as an evil, there's an intuitive awareness that something's not right. And once you have that clarity of thought that goodness involves things being right and evil involves things being not right, then that makes it clear why one would want to say that the ultimate source of everything is a source of good and not a source of evil. It would be – it's very intuitively plausible to say there is an infinitely good being that is the source of everything. And it's really hard to say there's an infinitely bad being, an infinitely evil being that's the source of everything. What would infinitely bad even mean? I mean, how could a being that was infinitely broken have the omnipotence needed in order to produce everything? I mean, omnipotence is power, and if his power were completely broken— then he wouldn't seem to be able to call created things out of nothing. Whereas if you say, well, okay, a positively omnipotent being, one that genuinely does have infinite power, it's very easy to see how you could get creation for, with such a being. But to say infinitely evil, that's going to be infinitely broken, infinitely not powerful, that's not a plausible creator.
Connor?
So you're saying like something. So you're saying that like we know that there's a way that we know that there's a way that things are supposed to be. We know that people aren't supposed to die, and so like we know there's a way things are supposed to be. So like,
well, if your brother's an atheist, you're starting from a position. He's starting from a position where he's not going to buy into some of these principles. I wouldn't start talking to him about death and what role death has in the greater scheme of things. I would try to get a basic understanding of when we just appeal to intuition, because every one of us has an intuitive understanding that good things are positive and evil things involve something being wrong or broken.
Yeah.
That's the starting point I'd go to if I wanted to show that the creator needed to be infinitely good rather than infinitely bad. Because if you start thinking about what's infinitely bad, it's going to mean infinitely broken, and that doesn't sound like a creator anymore.
Connor, thank you very, very much. I hope that is helpful, and you're a good brother. Let's go to Therese in Darien, Illinois, watching on YouTube. Therese, thanks for joining us on YouTube. You are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Why did Jesus heal the soldier's ear if he was going to kill him?
Okay. Well, actually, the individual in question wasn't one of the Roman soldiers. He was a slave or servant of the high priest. And based on the way he's described, his name, by the way, John tells us in his gospel, was Malchus. And the way Malchus is described in the gospels, he seems to be kind of the chief servant of the high priest. At least seems to be the servant that's in charge of the party that arrests Jesus. And so actually what Malchus did was just arrest Jesus. He wasn't one of the soldiers who were Romans who put Jesus to death. So I would say that Jesus healed Malchus because he was compassionate, because he had compassion even for his enemies. That's something that Jesus elsewhere teaches us we need to have. We need to love our enemies and turn the other cheek when they strike us. And so even though Malchus was in the process of arresting Jesus, Jesus nevertheless had compassion on Malchus, and he also signaled to everybody and thus in a way told everybody, I'm not a violent guy. My disciples are not revolutionaries trying to start a revolution. And he made that clear by stopping Peter from using that sword anymore and by healing the man that Peter did it to. So in addition to being a compassionate man, Jesus also was a nonviolent man. And he was making that point clearly to the authorities so they wouldn't have an excuse to crucify him on that ground, saying, oh, well, he was a violent revolutionary. He wasn't, and he wanted that to be clearly understood. What if Malchus had been one of the Roman soldiers who put Jesus to death? Would that have stopped Jesus from healing him? I don't think it would, because Jesus has compassion even on the people who put him to death. He died for their sins too. And actually, one of the Roman soldiers, the centurion who was in charge of the crucifixion, he actually became convinced. If you read Mark's gospel, after he's put Jesus to death, he sees what happens and he says, surely this man was the Son of God. So Jesus had compassion even on the people who put him to death, and some of them actually ended up responding and realizing he was the Son of God. So I would say that even if Malchus had been one of the Roman soldiers that killed Jesus, Jesus still would have had compassion on him because he has compassion on all of us.
How does that strike you, Therese?
That answered my question. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate the call. Therese, call anytime. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more Jimmy Akin, Open Forum, Catholic Answers Live, right after this.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Today, our faith is under attack like never before. Skeptics of all stripes are trying to undermine the very basis of our faith. Some critics argue that Jesus never even existed, and they've influenced tens of millions of people. Others have argued that even if Jesus existed, we can't trust the New Testament as history. No wonder so many people today doubt their faith or have lost it altogether. The good news is that there are answers to each and every one of their charges. That's why Catholic Answers Studios has just released a new DVD by Jimmy Akin titled The Dawn of Christian History. It's a powerful presentation in which Jimmy takes on the skeptics and refutes them point by point, showing you how even tiny details that you've never noticed all show how the New Testament is a faithful historical record. To make your donation and get a free copy of The Dawn of Christian History, visit Catholic.com and click the Dawn of Christian History banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Dawn of Christian History banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right. Subscriptions to Catholic Answers Magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order. Order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 2 hours of open forum today. 888-318-7884 is the number if you'd like to get involved. And if you have some question about what we Catholics believe, what we Catholics do, or why we believe those things or do those things, you can be Catholic and call. You can be non-Catholic and call. Anybody's welcome. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Jimmy, I am looking on the internet for a question that I just lost. And so I'm sorry I won't have the name of the person who asked this.
Okay.
But if I find it before you're done answering, I'll say it. Someone on YouTube actually wrote in, what exactly is Lent?
Lent is a liturgical season that occurs on the liturgical calendar of the Latin Rite of the Catholic Church, and it is the season that stretches from Ash Wednesday through most of Holy Thursday. It ends with the beginning of the Mass of the Lord's Supper on the evening of Holy Thursday. So it covers a period – you'll hear people say of 40 days. It's really not. It's really more than 40 days. 40 days is just an approximation that is used to evoke the 40 days that Jesus spent in the wilderness and the 40 days that Moses spent on the mountain and so forth. But really, it's more like 46, 47 days. It is a penitential season, And that means that we prepare ourselves spiritually for Easter by doing penance and trying to grow spiritually and trying to get closer to God so that when the time comes to celebrate Easter, we'll have been prepared, just the same way that John the Baptist called people to repent as a way of preparing for the coming of the Messiah. And so Lent sort of echoes that same spirit. When you know a big spiritual event's going to happen, like the coming of the Messiah or the celebration of Easter, you want to prepare for it by consecrating yourself, by repenting, by trying to become more holy, by growing in holiness under God's grace. And so that's its purpose. The way that Lent is celebrated in the Latin Rite of the Church takes different forms on Ash Wednesday and then on Good Friday, which is actually after Lent. It's part of a different liturgical season called Triduum. But on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, we both fast and we abstain from eating meat. And then on all of, in this country, on all of the Fridays of Lent, we also abstain from meat. And many people voluntarily do additional things, such as giving up something they enjoy for Lent or going out of their way to do various things that help other people for Lent or trying in some other way to grow closer to God.
So we don't just give up chocolate. You're supposed to do other things too?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear it. Random Thoughts was the name of the person.
Okay.
Because people use handles.
Handles on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah, on the internet. So I don't I'm assuming his last name is not Thoughts and his first name is not Random, but I don't know. I think we're going to go to Annie in Akron, Ohio, listening on Living Bread Radio. I'm just saying that so that our call screener will know that I'm going to line 6. Annie in Akron, Ohio, listening on Living Bread Radio. You are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
Pastor and
Oh, Annie, you're on with Jimmy Akin.
Stop this. Oh, hello?
Hello, hi. You're on the air. What's your question?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was talking to the call screener still.
Not anymore. What's your question?
Hello. Our son's Cub Scout pack has done two things this year that concern me. One was in the fall, they took a field trip to a haunted house run by the Shriners in our area. And the second one was just this week, they went to, they took the second graders to a Unitarian Universalist church to learn about their duty to God.
Hmm.
Our Cub Scout pack is, it is chartered through our Catholic parish.
Mm-hmm.
It is true that not all of the kids are Catholic, but most of the leaders, most of the kids are Catholic. It, with each event, I didn't let my kids participate, but when I raised concerns, I got a lot of answers, even from people who would be considered like leaders in the parish. Like, yeah, the kids need to learn tolerance. The Shriners really aren't a big deal anymore. They do good things in our area.
Okay, Annie, since we're getting close to the top of the hour, so you want Jimmy to answer what?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Oh, your question.
My question is, do you share my concern? Do you think these are shocking, or am I being overly scrupulous?
In the case,
my question.
Okay, so this is a matter of opinion, and different people have different people's children are different, and there's not a one size fits all solution for children. There are some children who are very insensitive to scary things. There are other children who are very sensitive to scary things. There are some children who have one set of temptations. There are other children who have another set of temptations. They're just like adults in that way. And so I, in general, hesitate to tell any parent the way they should raise their children. Speaking as a group phenomenon, though, I personally, unless a child has a particular sensitivity to scary things, I wouldn't be concerned about kids going to an ordinary haunted house unless it was, you know, like super terrifying maxi death house or something like that. If it's just an ordinary haunted house, well, that's designed for ordinary kids to go to, then the haunted house part wouldn't be of concern to me. In terms of the Shriners, there, I would say that's a relatively low risk kind of thing. The most children going to a haunted house, even if it's run by the Shriners, have no idea what Shriners are. That's not going to be what makes an impression on them about the haunted house. It'll be the stuff in the haunted house that does. And they're very unlikely to be led into Shrinerism as an adult as a result of having been to a haunted house as a child that was run by Shriners. So I would say that's a fairly low order of risk. In terms of going to a Unitarian church to learn about your duty to God, that's a much bigger red flag for me because Unitarians are not Christians. And what's worse, they claim to be Christians, but they don't believe in the Trinity. They don't practice Trinitarian baptism, so they don't have a valid baptism. And they therefore don't qualify as Christians, but they hold themselves out as a kind of Christian. And for second graders, I mean, they're at the age that they should be just forming their spiritual identities and learning the Catholic faith. They don't need to be exposed to radically different ideologies that are masquerading as Christian but really aren't. That's a level of intellectual complexity that seven-year-olds just should not have to take on as a burden. And so I would say that that's a big red flag to me, and I think it's entirely valid to object to exposing such young children to such radically non-Christian ideas at that stage in their development. Now, ultimately, everybody needs to grow up and become an adult and be able to handle contrary ideas, but you don't need to be able to do all of that when you're 7 years old.
How does that strike you, Annie?
Well, that is exactly the way I felt. I was very concerned. I think kids need to learn the truth about other religions, but maybe not necessarily about an untrue religion from people who believe it is the truth.
Well, eventually, I mean, it's good to interrogate, and by interrogate, I just mean discuss. It's good to discuss things with the person of the religion, but
you need to be prepared.
You need to be prepared. And at 7 years old, you're just not at that stage.
Annie, thanks very much for the call. I'm going to try to get a question in from Facebook before we have to go this hour.
You know, there's an asymmetry there because they weren't talking to seven-year-old Unitarians. What you're doing there is pitting adult Unitarians against seven-year-old Catholic children and other children intellectually. That's the disparity there that's worrying.
Yeah, indeed. Right.
Part of it anyway.
Let's go to Gammy's question on Facebook. She typed this in on Facebook, so I will read it to you. Jimmy, was Lucifer assigned his role by God? God must have known what his choice would be, right?
Lucifer was not assigned his role by God in the sense of God caused Lucifer to do evil. Lucifer chose to become evil on his own. And God, in terms of did God foresee that as happening, that's an interesting question. It will depend on the kind of knowledge God has. If God has a kind of knowledge, and I'll have to be brief about this due to the time, if God has a kind of knowledge that theologians refer to as middle knowledge, which is a knowledge of things that could have happened but didn't, then he would have known before, quote unquote, before, because God's outside of time, but he would have known all the different possibilities of what Luther would have done if he had created him, and he could have refused to create him at that point. If he knew, well, that he's going to fall, so I could refuse to create him and thus prevent him from falling. But he then, for some reason, chose to create him anyway, and then knowing Lucifer would freely choose to fall. That's the scenario that would play out if God has middle knowledge. But it's not a teaching of the church that God has middle knowledge. According to other theologians, including classically Dominican theologians, such as Saint Thomas Aquinas, God has knowledge of all possible worlds, and he has all knowledge of all things that actually occur, but he doesn't have knowledge of things, or doesn't necessarily have knowledge of things that would have occurred if he had done something different. And so on this view, God would create Lucifer and immediately see that Lucifer falls, mm-hmm. but he wouldn't have had knowledge of if I create him, he will fall, whereas if I don't create him, he won't.
So actually, it's a very complex question.
It's a very complex question, but I hope I did a reasonable job of making it clear as mud in the time available.
In any case, God's not responsible. We do that.
That is the key thing.
Yeah. Okay. Gammy, thanks very much for the question. We'll be right back with more Open Forum after this on Catholic Answers Live.